Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here. Really excited to spend a little time talking with you about infectious diseases. Not exactly the thing that people generally get excited talking about. But I'm going to talk a little bit about work that we've done with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and with Trust for America's Health over the span of several years, looking at an infectious disease report that TIFA puts out. I do want to say right at the top that this is a case study, really, of work that was done in late 2013. And so it was done prior to the current context of Ebola, the current focus on that. So do keep in mind that this is about a moment in time, but there is actually some really interesting stuff that's come up in terms of the current conversation around it. So my name is Carlos Roig. Joe Marks, who's in the back with Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, is also here. These are our handles on Twitter if you want to tweet at us or pose questions. Certainly can answer those after the fact or to continue the conversation. So the report that we've worked with over several years is Trust for America's Health Outbreaks Report. TIFA and RWJF have worked closely on this for several years. TIFA has had a lot of real impact on policy conversations in Washington. The report generally garners quite a lot of media attention. People focus on it. It hits policymakers. It moves the conversation in Washington. So we are happy to continue that work with them and know that that's the foundation that we're working from. But I do want to talk a little bit about a multi-year trajectory. From 2010 to 2012, 3 years, three releases of this report, Homefront did broadcast media outreach and booked TV and radio interviews for TIFA. Over the course of those 3 years, booked more than 150 airings. So roughly an average of 50 per year. That's significant success, significant opportunities for them to talk both nationally and locally about infectious disease, preparedness, what states are doing, what the federal government is doing. So we were working from a real base of strength. But one of the interesting things, and a little bit of an irony here, is that the consistent message of telling the media every single year that we are unprepared started to engender a little bit of fatigue in the coverage. Because as we were talking each year and doing outreach, talking to producers and journalists, they said, yeah, we were unprepared in 2011. We're still unprepared. What's new in the story? So we had to deal with or grapple with this question of how do we approach 2013? How do we approach an environment where we have a successful report that policymakers focus on, that media has interest in, but we're starting to sense a little bit of plateau in it? We had four main goals. We wanted to maintain interest and focus on the problem. We wanted to make sure that people talked about this. That was a big part of this, was we wanted conversations among the people in this room, among policymakers, among the general public to the extent that it makes sense in the course of what they're thinking about, but we wanted to catalyze conversation. We wanted to attract a younger generation. We knew that with digital and social media that we were going to be able to get at a slightly different audience, certainly, than we were going to get out with local news reports across the country on TV or radio. And we wanted to serve our core readership. Over the course of several years with the foundation, we've been generating a steady stream of content at newpublichealth.org. We're actually covering APHA conferences here as we have in past years. So we had core readership. And to be perfectly honest, you are that core readership. The attendees of APHA are the core readership. So we wanted to make sure that we did nothing to alienate that group. So where did we land? Where do you land when you start from a position of strength with a report, an established platform for digital communications, and a desire to not change the conversation but steer it in a slightly different direction? Well, we landed on something that we conceived and called Outbreak Week. A little tip of the cap to Discovery and Shark Week, any of you who may have seen that. We did not put a big petri dish on the side of our building like they do with a shark on the side of their headquarters in Silver Spring, Maryland. But we did want to create an ongoing digital conversation that would start in December of 2013 and continue. It would start with the release of the report but continue forward. So the idea was a really concentrated push over a 1 week period, but not a launch and stop mentality, but rather a launch and start mentality. Start the conversation and keep it moving. We had a single hashtag, Outbreak Week, that didn't exist before. So we conceived that, started it, allowed for us to really track impact and metrics from the very beginning to know that anything that was coming from that was generated by the conversation that we had started. So when we look at these types of digital content and engagement projects, and I say this as a former journalist and someone that works in digital communications now, platform, content, and engagement, those three things go together, but they're very expressly not linear. A lot of news organizations treat these things, have treated them as linear. You build the digital platforms, then you conceive and create the content, and then you think about distribution or engagement. We put those three things together at the beginning. In other words, the kind of engagement that we're trying to find determines the kind of content that we build. It also determines the kinds of platforms that we create or that we exploit. So the mix of platforms here is newpublichealth.org, rwjf.org, TIFA's digital properties, as well as free public properties on social channels like Twitter and Facebook and elsewhere. The content I'm going to talk in more depth, and then you'll see some of the engagement as well. But I'll come back to this. Think of these things as circular and impacting each other in the conceptualization at the beginning. So we created a series of content pieces. I'm going to show you, run through quickly. We created social graphics, almost mini ads. We played on this Petri dish theme that the bacteria form different shapes to tell a different story. So at a glance, take a closer look at how prepared the nation is for the next outbreak. Visit newpublichealth.org for more information, hashtag Outbreak Week, and then branded with RWJF. We had a series of these. We had another one that formed dollar signs. Take a closer look at the state of public health funding for outbreak response. When you create these types of pieces of content, you can target to particular audiences. So you can target an audience that's particularly focused on funding with this graphic, whereas you can talk to someone who's more focused on preparedness with a different kind of graphic. We continued the theme through, so Global Statistic has the world map built in. This is the top part of a long scrolling infographic that we created, and then we divided into various pieces. We had a series of content that we ran, some of it kind of traditional, an introduction post to sort of tell you that it's outbreak week, define what the heck this thing is that you'd never heard of. We actually had a GIF on the site that was this guy sneezing. And he was sneezing over and over and over. His words were forming, the spittle was forming the words Outbreak Week. It was truly disgusting. We did Q&As, which is a common editorial series that we have, but these were framed around Outbreak Week, so talking to folks, kind of getting them in their own words. We did a series of articles, the kinds of articles that you would hope that a news organization would create. We know news organizations tend to cover health and healthcare fairly well. They don't cover public health well. And that's one of the gaps that we were trying to fill. Tip of the cap to the zombie outbreak as well. We covered that. I talked about the infographics. But one of the things to get at the younger audience is we really went at lists. So we looked at the way that BuzzFeed is creating content, that other places are creating content, and we did a lot of fun posts. So it's kind of silly or odd to say they're fun posts about infectious disease, but trust me, it works. Top five things you didn't know could spread disease. Outbreaks on the big screen. We looked at films that had shown subject matter about outbreaks, and we even put together an outbreak response dream team from characters from films. So I'm going to show you a short video, 15 seconds, that we did, and pardon the pun, but it was an extremely viral video. That was the concept behind it. So 15 seconds. Oh, sorry.
Dance move. More viral than the most epic face plant. It's the most viral event of all time.
So, a short video like that plays really nicely on social. It's definitely an eye catcher. It was very tongue in cheek. But the idea was to get people to pay attention to the content, and we feel that it was fairly successful to get people to pay attention. So what were the top performers? What were the pieces in this whole collection of content? Three pieces that I want to show you, and we're going to come back to this one later. The five deadliest outbreaks and pandemics in history. We did some research, pulled together, wrote a nice piece, pulled some images that were in the public domain that we could pull in or other things we had access to, a simple list explaining what the five most deadly outbreaks were in history. The infographic that I talked about was very successful. A lot of people used that and were interested in that. And then the top five things you didn't know could spread disease. Again, five things like drum circles, bats, unvaccinated children, things that you couldn't possibly imagine would spread disease, but it got people thinking about infectious disease in a different way. Earned media results, nice earned media pickup from sites like Yahoo Health, Fast Company, content from reporters that they were distributing on their own Twitter channels, which is an important metric. Sure, we'd love a piece on the ABC Nightly News, but we're happy for Richard Besser to do something with it on Twitter as well. So, for instance, when we pushed that video out, we pushed it out with a simple tweet that just said, this video is more viral than kittens. And he said back, you know, nice hook, I had to watch. I mean, that is validation from the news media. It's validation in a public space. If nothing else, it says, hey, this will make you chuckle. It's something worth reading. And then our hope is that people then follow it. At the time, Upworthy was ascendant. Upworthy is a viral content distribution site. They're still around, obviously. Everyone was obsessed with Upworthy in mid to late 2013. This guy was the health fellow at Upworthy. And what he said was, this is absolutely incredible and my favorite thing ever. RWJF's Giftastic Outbreak Response Dream Team. Again, a younger audience, a younger target demographic. Yes, a fun response, but in some ways perfect. The Harvard School of Public Health started pushing out. We did no pre-coordination with them. By about Tuesday or Wednesday of outbreak week, they started to systematically push out their infectious disease content on the outbreak week hashtag. It's a qualitative metric, but it was an absolute win for us, for RWJ, and for TIFA. Big results, 83% rise in page views over an average week of content, 47 million impressions across Twitter. And what was really interesting was, in addition to the audience growth, that we rolled this out in the second or third week of December, I think the second week of December 2013. In 1 week's time, two of the posts from Outbreak Week had garnered more page views to that individual piece of content than content that we had had out since January, February, March, whatever it may be. So at the end of the year, when we had our top 10 list of most viewed content, two of these posts were on there. A really important metric for us. So back to the metric I gave before, 2010 to 2012, 150-plus airings, an average of 50 per year. In 2013 alone, 130 airings. These are airings on traditional channels, TV and radio. The main different thing that happened in 2013 was all this digital content. So when you start thinking about, yes, we were trying to get out a younger audience and attract a new generation, we were also trying to communicate with the audiences that we had successfully communicated with over a three-year period. And in 1 year, we nearly equaled the amount of airings that we had over a three-year period. In the context of Ebola, just real quickly, these are spikes in traffic to that post about the five deadliest outbreaks in history between August and November of 2014. And they correlate to announcements from CDC about raising alert level, about an Ebola patient dying, et cetera. This proves that if you create good content that's evergreen, that's well-crafted, it's out there and it lives, it's going to drive people back to you when the context returns. So just a couple quick takeaways. Number one, you want to build from a strong base. You want to establish digital properties. So establish them because it takes time to be able to layer on a campaign like this on top of something. Number two, your content should educate and surprise. If you lean too far towards educating, it can get boring. If you lean too far towards surprising, it can get flippant. So you want to be able to do both with the content you create. You want to make sure that it's creative and shareable, that it's built for people to redistribute it, that they're encouraged to redistribute it, that almost you force them to redistribute it. Really consistent promotion and cross-linking, So get people to the various other pieces of content. Don't be shy about having a piece of content that immediately gives someone an avenue out to go read another piece of content. We bounce around the web. We bounce around social media. It's okay. We did use paid media on a low level to support this, so we used social media content promotion to raise certain tweets. We also used content discovery network like Outbrain to push contextual content. And then lastly, make sure that you always give people something to talk about, right? It's not just enough to push your content at them. Push something at them that forces them to jab with their elbow the person sitting next to them and say, check this out. This is completely different and crazy. Why am I reading about drum circles next to Tough Mudder races in an infectious disease report? And so thank you for taking the time. Look forward to more conversations, and Joe and I will be able to answer any questions you might have during the Q&A. Thank you.